Welcome to Inspiring Futures. I'm your host, Ed Cotton. This is a podcast where we talk about the how, what, and why of the future. Welcome to another episode of Inspiring Futures. I'm excited that Marilyn Galen Quirk, is that your name, everybody?
Yep.
Got that right. Are on my show today, and we're going to talk about running an agency during a crazy pandemic, what it takes to start up an agency these days, and what their vision and kind of notion of a new agency is. So, Merrill, why don't you start and give us a little accelerated take on your resume?
Oh, yes, the CV. I love it. So my background is actually in 360 degree communications. I started my career in public relations at a firm in Washington, D.C., helping clients like Cisco and trade associations with media strategies. And then I wanted to get into advertising, so I actually moved to India and joined Ogilvy & Mather, which is one of the world's largest ad agencies. And then moved to San Francisco and worked client side at a startup for a bit. And that gave me a great perspective on what it's like to be on the other side. So hiring agencies instead of working at the agencies, which was really interesting. And then Galen and I launched Quirk right after that.
Galen, what's your background?
Well, I bring in the, so Merrill brings the agency experience. I bring the film experience. So once when I was 10 years old, I was actually in front of the camera. I was in a little movie called Chocolat with Johnny Depp and Juliette Binoche. It was the peak of my career at that point, still to this point. And so I've been on sets my whole life growing up. I went to film school at NYU and then I started directing films. And naturally, when I met Merrill, I think, as a filmmaker, there's a few paths to making films and also making money. And one of those is advertising. So starting Quirk made a lot of sense and have a video focus since that was my background. And like I said, Merrill brought in the strategy, the agency, the business acumen. From my perspective, we're lucky that every day I you know, get to be on set still. It's the place I love most. Shoot, you know, films, they may only be 30 seconds long or sometimes 15 or sometimes even 6 seconds for YouTube, but they're films nonetheless. So it's super exciting to be able to do that for a living.
That's great. So what made you decide to make this crazy decision to start a business?
Well, I think the true answer, honestly, is that we really wanted to work for ourselves. And I think there's a point in every entrepreneur's journey that they go in thinking, I can do this better than the other guys. And so we looked at the traditional agency model, and there was this notion of, we think we can solve for some of the pain points, and we think we can do it better than some of the other agencies out there. And that's really been the thesis for Quirk since the beginning, is how do we build a non-traditional agency? How do we build an agency of the future? Using our skill sets. And as Galen mentioned, with his film acumen and creative acumen and my, you know, experience working in traditional agencies, it made quite a lot of sense for us to partner and give it a go.
So how long have you been in business for?
We are going on almost our sixth year of business. It feels like three decades.
Yeah. So how would you describe the various changes or pivots or things you've made in those 6 years?
That's a great question. You know, when we started, we actually were a full service agency. So there's a lot of full service agencies out there. Essentially, for folks listening who don't know that term, it's creative agencies that do a little bit of everything. So they'll do out of home campaigns, they'll do print campaigns, they'll do video, they'll do online. And when we launched, we figured we'd do the same. And about a year and a half in is when we decided to exclusively focus on video-based advertising. And that was a great pivot for us. It allowed us to get a lot more specific in our deliverables and capabilities. And video is particularly compelling for brands. you know, in the last decade increasingly. And so just moving into that area of expertise actually really helped our positioning, and it really just, you know, drove revenues up from there.
There's also, I mean, there's also just the entire system of commercial making is completely broken right now. It's a hodgepodge of agencies coming up, you know, agencies of record coming up with ideas and then bidding out to production companies who are just trying to be undercut the in-house agency team, who then bid out to directors who are all working for free to come up with pitches to an idea that they have never seen before in their life. And it's just total crap. And so I think to make something like a video that's cohesive, or to make really any piece of creative art, you need to be there from the beginning, and you need a small team, and they need to understand the idea from inception and execute it. And so what we do as this agency that's focused entirely on video is we're able to be there. We get the clients ourselves. We're able to be there to come up with the campaigns. We're able to work side by side with the client. And then we have our own in-house directors, whether it's myself, whether it's you know, someone on our team who's directing, who handles all of that. And what you end up getting is a video that we've come up with, we've worked with the client on, we've executed on, we've done post-production on, all of that in-house. And generally, it turns out way better than whatever the other system has been for the last 50 years.
One thing we haven't talked about is, where are you?
We're in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whereabouts? Are you up the road from me?
Oh, no way. Okay, we're in Sunset Park.
Yeah, you're kind of up the road. I'm in Park Slope, so we're only like a couple of miles away.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Well, are you in one of those big industrial buildings?
Yeah, exactly. Industry City. That's where our headquarters are.
Yeah, great. So how do you go get business? I mean, how are you getting business? How are you getting clients? How are you finding work?
That is the big question. That's the number one question I actually get is, well, how do you even start, you know, getting your own sales as an entrepreneur, and specifically as a new agency? Because getting sales in the first year of business is much different than getting clients now in our almost sixth year of business. In the beginning, it was a hustle, you know, call up your network, do a lot of cold calls to brands we want to work with, try to get our foot in the door. And to be honest, Ed, that first year, we took on projects with tiny budgets that no other agency would touch, specifically for us to get our foot in the door with those brands. And then once we proved ourselves over the years, those brands increasingly came back with bigger and bigger budgets. And now it's a mix of reaching out to brands that we're really inspired by and want to collaborate with, along with we have a lot of client referrals. You know, our clients send us work. Clients who migrate to new brands, they bring us along. But yeah, that's my primary role at Quirk. It's just making inroads with new cool brands that we can collaborate with.
What makes you guys call yourself an agency, but they're also production, you kind of like a production company. So what would you say what makes you an agency?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I think in general, while there's obviously different models out there, a production company in general tends to just handle only the shoot day production, and they may help a little bit with script writing, but they're not there for the strategy or coming up with the overall like campaign and executing on that. So while we have elements of a production company, we do have post in-house, we do have our own roster of directors. We also have that part, like that strategy up front that an agency has, that full, full 360 look at what's going to work for them and ultimately what's going to drive, conversions for them, not just like, hey, how are we going to make the video look good?
Yeah. We're really there at the inception of the idea, helping brands craft concepts that are going to resonate, writing the scripts, developing the creative up front. And to Galen's point, we also happen to handle the production of those ideas. So it's a new hybrid model that makes different from, you know, a true production house.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you sort of intimated about this at the beginning, but really it's kind of like the world of beverages. It was like wine, spirits, and beer are all coming together. You know, like everyone's sort of making the same thing, you know, and you know, these things in cans that are easy to drink and usually have some kind of fruit flavors. There's, you know, there's a wine-based one, there's a gin-based one, and now there's a beer-based one. So it's all kind of like now it's happening in the ad agency landscape. So ad agencies, you know, are taking on other dimensions. Production companies think they're ad agencies. So I can talk to a production company, they might say, oh yeah, we do strategy too. So it is kind of like there's a blending of a lot of these things right now. You can't really put anyone in a box. I mean, Edelman has its own, you know, creative department, media companies have their own creative department. So it's kind of like, it's everyone's trying to get everything. As an outsider right now, as a freelancer, that's how I see the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the shifts in agency models, to your point, are really being driven by a demand from brands for efficiencies in their creative partners. You know, where can we be more efficient with the creatives that are being developed, whether it's being more efficient with budgets by combining resources under one roof, or being more efficient with timelines. You know, let's limit the number of stakeholders that touch a creative so we can get it into market faster. But there certainly has been a rising demand, I think, for efficiency from brands that's kind of shaping the new agency model.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. Talk a little bit about, because I see there's a generational kind of split in ad agencies. You know, there's this sort of old school people like me who kind of, you know, grew up in a kind of classic Ogilvy type world of building brands, you know, usually through television advertising. And then there's a new generation, I would include you guys in that new generation, of people who kind of understand the switch has been switched and we're now in a digital landscape and performance marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Gaining users, members,
yeah,
customers, subscribers is now sort of the key KPI. And, you know, I recognized this a few years ago when a major, major client said that they wanted to test a TV spot.
Yeah.
Testing a TV spot, they meant testing it against all their other channels that they were using, including social. Whereas I'd grown up in a world where the TV spot was the lead dog and everything else followed.
Right.
So you guys are part of this new world. Do you want to talk a little bit about the role of performance and how that works and how you evaluate success?
100%. I think there's been a big shift on the brand side over the last 10 years, this rise of what we call direct-to-consumer companies. And those are kind of the new crop of companies and brands that largely started on social and digital properties and are very performance-oriented. They're analytical-based. They want to see performance from every single marketing dollar spent. And they have started demanding a performance lens from their creative partners. And Quirk, we just so happen to be really poised to help those kinds of companies because we are big on data and analytics as well. And so, you know, it's funny when you mention testing on TV, that's the number one request from these types of brands, which is, hey, can you help us, you know, figure out which creative is going to outperform the other one? And it's an ongoing cycle. And we actually do quite a bit of TV with direct-to-consumer companies, especially these days, because they're trying to find new sources of customers beyond social and digital. But there is a mandatory testing component to the creative. And we are being benchmarked on very performance-centric KPIs. The expectation is that our videos, our creative, are going to convert.
And I think from a creative standpoint too, I can weigh in, which is that there is so much ego in advertising and it's so silly. In the end of the day, we're trying to help brands grow their brand and sell product. And I think a lot of people like pretend that's not the case, which great for them. But I think that's why we're here. We're here to sell product and to move product. And I think testing is another way that can really take the ego out of that. Because it's no longer a couple people in a boardroom trying to come up with what they think will be a brilliant idea. And it's, hey, we can actually try a couple different ideas at once. We can try it on different channels, to your point, but also we can try multiple different creatives really quickly, put those in market and see what consumers respond to. And that doesn't mean that it can't be funny or entertaining or brilliant, but it means we have the opportunity to really figure out what will be funny or brilliant or sad or whatever the emotion we're going for, but also will sell product.
Right. It's kind of the evolution from kind of, you know, the Mad Men, Don Draper era of like this.
That's my era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're drapers too. So full respect for Don, but I love what Galen said. It's not like a single person in a room saying, here's the brilliant idea. It's actually giving the power back to consumers and saying, let's test a bunch of ideas and see what the consumers respond to.
So do you call these people growth? I call them growth hackers, these kind of.
Yeah, growth hackers. You know, it's figuring out how can we drive the bottom line for businesses.
And what happens is they run out of runway because they can only hack so far. You know, it used to be, they were kind of put in a room and they were MBAs. This is how I see them, like young MBAs told to become growth hackers. And they sort of hacked the internet at a very low cost. And then suddenly things became expensive. Suddenly Facebook, DPM was ridiculous. And suddenly it became almost impossible to do this on a limited budget. Now you needed a big budget. And then even with that budget, you ran out of potential customers. And then you went and made a phone call to someone like you and said, we need to make a video.
Yeah. And I think that's why you're seeing kind of this mass re-entry into linear TV from direct-to-consumer companies, because they are running out of runway on social channels. And also, I think that's the potential of OTT channels, which is increasingly, you know, rising and an increasingly important channel for customer acquisition.
Mm-hmm. Explain that.
Well, you have, you know, the Hulus of the world, and all of a sudden, especially during the pandemic, viewership on those is through the roof. And so, you know, beyond linear TV, which still to this day, it, you know, has the most eyeballs of any channel, there's this relatively new channel of OTT where a lot of brands see as a testing ground. And so that's why a lot of the requests that we get for linear TV also include some sort of tests on OTT, because it is a new channel to take advantage of. There's still quite a lot of unknown there, but it's an exciting place to be for brands.
And you have your youngest audience there. That's true. Your millennial audience on these streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have their typical cable subscription. And certainly a lot of the brands that we work with are targeting that consumer demographic. So it's a good place to trap them.
That's awesome. Do you guys ever have really hard conversations? Sorry, probably can't hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Do you ever have hard conversations with some of these companies? I find many of them extremely derivative of others, and that sometimes it's the product that kind of sucks and you can't do anything. You know what I mean? It's sort of like they're sort of expecting the world. They've sort of copied a leader or someone else. Mm-hmm. I mean, the mattress, obviously Red Antler is this kind of iconic agency that built its business on DTC and doing a lot of work for Casper. Now there's rumored to be about 110 mattress companies.
Right. Oh my gosh.
And are they all great, or are they, you know, are some better than others? So it seems in DTC there's so many players now, and you know, who are the ones who are really genuine and have great products, and who are the ones who are wannabes? And I would imagine if you're working in that space, you might end up having some pretty hard conversations, because no matter what ads you you produce that you might not be able to get the numbers because it's too competitive. The space is too competitive.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, listen, there's anytime there's a good idea, there's obviously going to be a lot of copycats. I think if one thing we don't, as marketers, necessarily have as much control over the product as much as obviously the consumer facing marketing. But I think it presents us an opportunity to go in and say, look, a lot of people are doing this. A lot of people look like this. They sound like this. They're talking to your consumers like this. You guys have a similar product. So what are we going to do that makes people, you know, if we can't focus on like features being the differentiator, how are we going to build a brand for yourself and a brand tone and an awesome video campaign that makes people say, huh, for whatever reason, I like them. I know that they're a similar mattress, but I feel like they get me a little bit more. And I think that's a great challenge as a marketer. When you do have a little bit of creative limitations like that in terms of, hey, maybe there's other people out there or there's a lot of competitors out there. And we often sit down with our clients and do have that hard conversation and say, you can go out there and sound like everybody else. We'll even like sometimes do a mashup of all the other commercials in our first meeting and be like, this is what everyone sounds like. See, and everyone around the room goes, you're right. Let's not be that. Let's be something different. And so that's really fun to come in and help craft that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about now, the moment. The moment we thought was going to pass in a few weeks and is now several months later. How do you make anything? How do you do anything in this environment where it's hard to meet face to face, no one's offices are open, and it's very, very hard to shoot?
Oh yeah. I mean, I have never been so glad to be a small, nimble agency than during the pandemic. Because if we were larger, slower, it would have been incredibly difficult to pivot. And I actually think that's why some of the larger agencies, you know, experienced fairly quickly mass layoffs and that sort of thing, which, you know, my heart breaks for that. We have been really lucky. We have not downsized our team. We've actually been hiring over the last couple of months. And so we're in a super lucky position. And it's because we've been able to pivot and be nimble fairly quickly. You know, in the first 3 months of this, tail end of March, April, May, no shoots were happening. We were not shooting. And we're in the video business. So that should have been a problem. Instead, what we did is we did animated videos. We have a great animation team. And that obviously doesn't require any live shoots. And we did a lot of remote shooting. So literally shipping drop kits and equipment to talent and directing them from afar, you know, more like UGC style creative. And that actually worked really, really well and helped, you know, keep the brands that we work with afloat and move the needle for them without actually having to do any live shoots. And now we're really lucky because live shoots have started up again, obviously with big COVID safety, you know, restrictions, but they're happening. And so because we're based in New York and New York has some of the lowest COVID count, we're lucky enough to be able to shoot again as of the last 2 months. So we're back on.
Mm-hmm. And New York State has been great actually in terms of just outlining what they had a commission focus on New York and LA and outlined a big, you know, what makes sense for safety on set. So there's testing, there's, you know, PPE everywhere. The crew size has been cut to about 25% of what the normal crews would be. We've been shooting a lot of outdoors or if it's indoors with like well-ventilated areas. So everything you hear about, we've been able to accomplish and it's created a good, safe environment to be able to still accomplish shooting commercials.
There's a new job being created. The COVID person. I was on a shoot. I was actually being videoed, and there was a COVID person who.
Yeah. COVID safe.
Yeah. Who insists on everyone having a mask? And do you need another mask? Do you need a new mask?
Yeah.
Sanitizer.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do, right? We have to do that.
Now. Exactly.
So this is, does this mean it's like a good time for you guys to be pitching and, making those calls and getting, because, you know, clients have an urgency that
It's funny enough, we actually have not even had to make that many calls. It's been brands that have been reaching out to us over the last 2 months and calling us up and saying, hey, we're ready to get going again. Mm-hmm. I think there were about 3 or so months where brands kind of were at a standstill, rightly so. No idea what was happening. Consumer spend was down, et cetera. But at a certain point, brands have to sell product, right? And so specifically in the last 2 months, there's been a deep sense of urgency of, okay, well, let's get back up and running and let's get ahead of the holiday season and let's make sure we're starting content up again. So yeah, we've been fielding a lot of calls and it seems like brands are starting to spend again, which is great, you know, for us and for the advertising industry at large.
When you make a credentials presentation, do you talk about case studies or? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite case study that you like presenting?
Ooh, favorite case study. I mean, we probably have very different favorite case studies. You know, I think what's really incredible about our team is we're a small team, but we have an incredible breadth in terms of the creative output that we have. And so one of the favorite spots we've ever done is for a Parisian-based lingerie brand called Chantel. And the work ended up being really just gorgeous. We shot it on film. So it had kind of that really magical, you know, grainy element to it. It was very artistic shot. We specifically collaborated with dancers and we created an entire set out of this stretchy material. And from an artistic standpoint, that's one of my favorite case studies. What about you, Galen?
Yeah, I think, well, just to your vertical point, I think whenever we're talking to a new client or a new potential client, we've been able to, and I don't think this is necessary, while we're focused on video, I don't think this is necessarily similar to a lot of other agencies. Since we're focused on video, we touch so many different verticals. Mm-hmm. And so we've done food and beverage, we've done product, we've done, you know, we've even worked with some mattress brand on some marketing. And we've touched like every type of advertising possible. So there's almost always been a precedent to the vertical that we've done. I think my favorite case study is a client of ours, Carbonite, which is a B2C, but also B2B data security. And in this case, the ads were targeted to IT managers, which seems like and it was a campaign that they wanted to target IT or CTOs or IT managers on YouTube with a 90-second commercial that was very emotional. And I think, you know, when you think of B2B data storage, you don't think of anything that's going to make you cry or necessarily, you know, maybe it'll make you cry because you don't want to watch it because it's so boring when you think of B2B IT services. But in this case, we had some research that said that, you know, hey, IT managers, just like humans too, they have kids, they're just like everyone else, they have kids, they have feelings, they have emotions. And so we crafted this very emotional, beautiful spot about a dad who's an IT manager making it just in time to his daughter's cello rehearsal or cello performance because Carbonite helped him out. And it was a huge success. People watched all 90 seconds of it, which is a long time on YouTube, as you know. And I think it just goes to show that no matter what the like vertical may be and your preconceived notions that maybe it's not the most glamorous ad campaign, there's always an opportunity to touch people, make them feel emotional, and sell product at the same time.
Yep, that's for sure. What are you guys looking forward to? Like, I know we're not, it's like a day by day thing right now. The idea of looking forward to anything is, it's kind of somewhat challenging. But are the new, is this something in the new world of where video is going to be or what you can do in video or like selling direct from a video or anything technology wise that is particularly interesting?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it earlier. I think OTT holds a lot of promise. There's some really cool interactivity that you're able to layer on to ads in OTT that brands are just starting to test out. So from a distribution standpoint and a creative standpoint as a channel, I think OTT is going to be really big over the next couple of years. I also think that, you know, social video like TikTok, Snap, those are some really exciting places for brands to be. And we're looking forward to kind of continuous campaigns going into those spaces. That's what I would say, you know, we're looking forward to just in the next, you know, year or so.
And I think from a creative standpoint, like we, I mean, 20 years ago, we were, you know, I was making VHS or mini DV videos and you had to inject the tape. And I mean, it was nuts. And now it's like every video we could have a drone fly through if we wanted to. I mean, the creative limitations are non-existent anymore. Between our in-house animation, 3D modeling, just like we can do anything with video. And I think that's, from a creative standpoint, it's amazing. And I also think it's like the fact that everyone now, you know, whether it's your grandfather or grandmother is editing videos on their iPhone themselves of the family holiday party, everyone has those tools at their disposal now, which means us who do this professionally really have a kick in the butt to push the potential of what we can do with the professional level tools. So I think it's a great challenge of knowing that everyone in the world can now make videos. What are we going to do to push the boundaries internally too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find people want, if they're going to spend the money on a production, they're going to maximize that production. So you're going to have a photographer on set. So you're going to be making cut downs and you want a TikTok. Is that list becoming ever longer?
Oh yeah.
We need a Facebook thing. We need the YouTube. We need the TikTok. So suddenly that day long shoots turn into like 18 hours of endless finding the B-roll, doing interviewing the talent and all that other stuff. Is that something you're finding?
Yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. The longer answer is, you know, budgets are getting tighter and tighter, especially during the pandemic. And so there's more pressure to make the most out of a shoot day. And video is not cheap. You know, video done professionally is not cheap. If you shoot something on your iPhone and edit yourself, yes, that's cheap. But if you're working with an agency, you're spending some money for that footage, right? And so going into any project, it's a conversation of how much can we get out of these 10 hours or 12 hours or 14 hours. Certainly reworking footage for different channels is a no-brainer. Having a photographer on set to capture behind the scenes or have a separate photo shoot, that's happening as well. Ultimately, the restriction at the end of the day is the number of hours of the shoot day. So, you know, if clients want to spend overtime or go into a second shoot day, that's a different conversation and certainly allows for even more content.
Do these growth hackers who are just completely unprepared for the world of video have sticker shock when you start talking about how much a crew costs and location costs for the day? Is it like, you know, because you've got the iPhone problem, which is like you're shooting on the iPhone and it probably would be pretty similar. As growth hacker, and then suddenly you've got like multiple zeros on a day sheet.
I think certainly like years ago, as we were building up the agency, we had some conversations where maybe clients had never worked with an agency before, or maybe had only worked with a freelancer before, and so didn't necessarily understand all of the added value. But I think a lot of our clients right now see us, they have worked with agencies before and they're looking for an agency like us that is built for a more adaptable, flexible world. And maybe they spent $1 million on their previous ad campaign or $500,000 or some, you know, older pricing model, and they got one TV spot out of it. And they're looking for an agency that will be able to beat that price and provide a similar look as what those larger companies. Because there's, I mean, a lot of that, yeah, without getting too far into pricing, a lot of the pricing on the high end there is not necessarily necessary. But when you compare it to an iPhone, I don't think that's an adapt description to what we do, because the iPhone.
No, I'm just saying.
But it's a good first thought. I think the camera is just the tool, like what the camera, or whether you use like a giant lens and, you know, amazing camera or whatnot, doesn't really matter to the thought that's put into the story and the art direction and bringing all that together. Yeah. And I think if you're going to film, you know, maybe like a testimonial video where you send some people some iPhones or whatever in their living room and you're comfortable with that, sure, you can pull it off with an iPhone. But I think if you want to really hone in on what your brand is, what's going to sell, and lean in on that expertise, as well as how to make it look like a, you know, a full movie, you know, Hollywood style production, then I think that's where you start to look for an agency.
I mean, the clients that appreciate this the most are clients who have previously worked with bigger agencies and understand that cost, because we are significantly more competitive as a small, agile team. However, we're definitely more expensive than a freelancer. And I think, you know, where it's not the best fit is, to Galen's point, if a client is looking for something that's shot on an iPhone and looks pretty lo-fi, there's no need to work with the agency on that. You know what I mean? So it's a balancing act. If you want the storytelling expertise, the brand building expertise, and you want high production looking creative, that's when we come in.
How do you balance the discipline you guys talked about, where you want to have a strategy, you know, you want to get the right creative brief, with the cost and the desire for nimbleness and time? I mean, there's sort of, you could easily see just this mindset, which is, oh, we just go and make something. Whereas those of us who worked in agencies understand there's a little bit more process involved, but that process can be costly and can take time.
Yeah, so we're actually a little bit unusual in our pricing, in the sense that we align on budgets upfront. So if you know, kind of the traditional agency model is, we'll pitch you an idea, we'll sell you that idea, and then we'll figure out the costs, what it's going to take to bring that idea to life. And we do it backwards. We upfront align with the brands that we work with. We say, this is your budget, and we're only going to pitch you ideas within this budget. So that just requires a little bit more discipline on our end and our creative team, that when we're presenting ideas and concepts, we know the money that we're working with, and we are crafting concepts that maximize that budget. But, you know, to your point, you mentioned the creative brief. No good creative is created without a creative brief that all stakeholders have signed off on. So before we do any kind of creative concepting, it's imperative that we have in writing, what are our key performance indicators? What does success look like for this campaign? What is the key messaging that we're going for? You know, and that creative brief really becomes our North Star as we're crafting concepts for our clients.
I'm going to flip to a completely weird question.
Sure.
Your first ad agency experience was in India.
Correct.
Was that helpful, or was it a hindrance? I.e., India is not the United States. It's very, very different. But I'm sure you've got Ogilvy is an agency with a respected reputation globally. But what did you learn? Basically, my shorthand probably is, what did you learn in India that has been useful here?
Yeah, I actually think my experience at Ogilvy in Bangalore was incredibly formative. And really was fuel to how Quirk is structured. The department that I worked in Ogilvy was in charge of adapting campaigns for emerging markets. And so it was all about agility and leanness and nimbleness. That we really kind of operated differently than any other Ogilvy headquarters anywhere in the world, because we were all about adaptation and launching tons and tons of assets across the globe. So it was really insightful as far as how to structure a team for agility and getting creatives to market quickly and kind of doing that quick adaptation. Again, nimbleness was really what I learned in India.
So that was it. That's interesting. So it was kind of a specialized unit within Ogilvy designed to do rapid fire, agile adaptation.
100%. And you know, that's what opened my eyes to, you know, there is a way to do creatives quicker and more efficiently and, you know, more with more agility. And I think that should be part of every single agency that's operating in the future, today and in the future. It's just brands are increasingly demanding that creatives get done quicker and are launched in market quicker so that we can test and learn from those creatives and optimize as we go along. So I think that really formed the foundation of how I view creative agencies.
And so they picked Bangalore because it was a lower cost center?
I assume that had something to do with it. Certainly you have a highly skilled team, you know, in Bangalore and, you know, huge workforce that's ready to go. But yes, you know, obviously, you know, in Bangalore, you don't have some of the same costs as you do in, let's say, you know, downtown Manhattan, you know, at every level. So there definitely is something to that.
And what does that make you think about outsourcing and how you outsource and could you outsource and could you have people in other countries doing things? And
yeah, 100%. I mean, we have, you know, one of our sister agencies that we've been working with since day one is an additional resource for us that sits out of Guadalajara, Mexico. And turns out that Guadalajara is a hub for highly skilled production
graphic design
and animators. And so that partnerships makes a lot of sense for us, as you know, especially since there's an increasing demand from brands to get more into Hispanic focused marketing and productions in Latin America. And so that partnership has been valuable to us definitely as we scale up.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting what you know, this idea that you kind of basically deconstruct the agency model and you apply technology and you apply global know-how, and suddenly you're still building your own, you're a very small team and you're building a global network.
Right.
You know, that's pretty, it's pretty incredible without any of the overhead that the true network agencies have. So that's pretty fascinating. So are you finding like minds? Are you finding willing collaborators? Is that easy, or is that kind of a journey that you've got to find the right people? It sounds good on paper, but actually it's quite hard to find right partners.
Yeah, and I think we have a certain standard that we have and that we're looking for in a partner. But to your point, and it answers both this question and the last one, it's amazing that a small little agency like ours out of Brooklyn last year was able to shoot spots in Paris, in Lithuania, in Mexico, in LA, in Texas, in almost a completely nimble filming environment. And that's thanks to our global network of just skilled people as well that we bring on and that we're lucky to collaborate with.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's about forming relationships with people who are going to view the creative the same way that we do. And whether those people sit out of Brooklyn or LA or Guadalajara, you know, we want those people as partners because we're ultimately stronger together.
Yep. So what do you see happening in the next 12 months? Do you think we're in the sort of like, are we going to go like up and down? What's this kind of, is there going to be like a Z shape, a K shape, a square ridge shape, or what is this shape? Are we in the positive side where I think people are thinking things are coming back to normal? Or
I mean, I think there's a lot of uncertainty, obviously. This is the gazillion dollar question I think everyone wants to know. And there's uncertainty, obviously, with an election coming up, with winter coming up, a lot of different factors, and I don't think anyone knows the right answer, or it would be fool's errand to make a prediction. I do know one thing, which is that people are going to still have to sell their product. And agencies that are able to adapt to, you know, whether it's filming restrictions or work from home restrictions, and still work with their clients to help, sell their products are going to be better. And I think smaller, you know, I think there's two big conversations. One is this whole environment just screwing over small businesses And it will just end up in these giant agencies, you know, buying everybody up and being stronger. And I think, sure, there's certainly part of that. And I think, you know, our government could certainly help smaller businesses that are struggling more. But I think the other side is that there's a nimbleness element to entrepreneurs that haven't built out a big team and have a smaller runway and don't need as much money to operate each month, that can adapt because there are brands out there that are going to still need to sell, and that's not going to change. That's not going to change, given what's going on right now.
I will add, definitively, there will be pressure, and we're already seeing this from brands, that their marketing spend delivers on the investment. We have a lot of pressure for the campaigns that we create to move the needle and drive sales and impact our brands and our clients' bottom lines. And I think agencies that are prepared to create performance work are going to be better equipped, because ultimately the brands that we work with, they're also going through the pandemic, and sales really, really matter right now. So that is a trend that I see. It's happening now, and I see it continuing for at least the next 12 months. It's again, just this real focus on performance creative.
One final question. There's a bunch of people out there who may have been working in agencies 6-10 years, who are no longer working in agencies, and they're writing business plans for setting up another agency, and the world is going to be inundated with lots and lots and lots of little agencies. What do you think is critical, given that you're 6-year veterans in this business, that these people think about rather than just on a whim go, oh, we're going to start an agency? What do you think is critical to surviving 6 years, and what do they need to be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this sounds a little generic. I think one is what we saw success in, and what I would give advice is be a niche, be really good at something, start in that area. And then the second one, you hear about this a lot more for product focused companies, but I would say listen to your customer. I think what we've evolved, if you look at where we were 6 years ago to where we are now, it's a totally different group of things that we do and type of marketing. And it's really evolved to fit to our customers' brands. We're coming out of the woodwork and saying we need videos quick. We want to go on TV. We want to have 20 variations of that video. And so we built out a framework to do that. And as we built out that framework, more brands came in and said, oh, you guys are experts in doing this kind of variation and building this out quickly and working with our price point. And you seem to have done that with a bunch of other people in the space. And that's really fueled our growth. But that all came with years of listening to our customers. When we first started, we were like, let's just be an agency that does everything, and we'll do some, you know, PowerPoint marketing, and we'll do some, you know, anything that came through, we just said yes to at the beginning, you know, when you start a business. And then I think after the first year, we really just were like, well, that's not making us any money, and that we're not good at, and that we probably shouldn't do anymore. And this is what we are good at, and this is where we are giving value, and this is what people keep asking us for. And we really tailored that. And that took several years to do, as anyone who started a company knows. But I think if you start with a niche, you're going to just be able to figure out the value of that niche much better to your clients than if you say, I'm going to become the next Ogilvy right now. You might, but I don't think you're going to do it just by starting with a team of 10.
But I, you know, at the end of the day, I would actually encourage anyone who's thinking about starting an agency. I love the independent agency world, mm-hmm. and I actually think there needs to be more people taking that leap, especially women, especially minorities. You know, mm-hmm. the world needs more independent agencies that are led by different perspectives.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Any final thoughts or words or anything that you feel I haven't touched upon that would be good to add?
No, I completely agree. I think like if you're out there and you're thinking about starting your own business or starting your own production company or starting your own agency, you should do it. I mean, you don't want to wake up in 10 years and say, what if I did that?
Right.
What if the worst that can happen is you fail.
Yeah.
And like business owners, small business owners fail all the time. They fail. We failed at just, I mean, we're probably failing at something today, 100% within the company in some way or another. And I think they're going to fail all the time. But if you don't try to do that, you're going to wake up in 10 years and you're going to have that unknown.
Yeah.
And I think to Meryl's point, like, you should go for it. Just, you know.
Brilliant. Thank you guys so much.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
That was really interesting stuff. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for your perspectives.
This is your host, Ed Colton. Thank you so much for listening to Inspiring Futures. Until next time.